This is where I see a great chance for the companies to, on the one hand, ensure the responsibility on human rights, and on the other hand, create sustainable products where the demand is growing. So we have both human rights and profit. And this, I guess, is a good combination of targets.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, the number one podcast focusing on the digitization of supply chain. And I'm your host, Global Vice President at SAP, Tom Raftery. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Raftery with SAP, and today we have a very special show for you. Today is the 100th episode of the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. So kudos to us. We got to 100, and thank you all so much for your time, your attention, your dedication to listening to the show. For those of you who've left reviews and ratings on the various platforms, I really appreciate that. Thank you. And for telling all your friends, and if you haven't told all your friends, why haven't you? So thanks a million, everyone, for that. And today, my special guest is Jan. Jan, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thank you very much. Of course, great to have the 100. Jan Herrmann is my name. I'm responsible for the procurement team at PwC in Germany. I'm since 12 years in the procurement consultancy environment, and looking forward to discuss a little bit about transparency and supply chain today.
Okay, superb. And, you know, it's great to have you on the show, Jan. Procurement is a topic that we don't discuss enough in this podcast. We haven't had many episodes dedicated to procurement, so that's great. And I think one of the topics that is most important to you is the topic around transparency and trust in sustainable supply chains. Can you talk me a little bit through that, what that is and why it's important? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on the procurement side, it's very important to have the visibility and transparency on the entire supply chain behind your company, so to say. So what is the end-tier supply chain? What happens there? Which prices are available is the obvious topic we have on the procurement. But in the meanwhile, we have more requirements to our suppliers on quality, on carbon footprint, on human rights, on stability due to COVID effects or due to other pandemic reasons we had in the last years. So it becomes more and more important to get a broader view and a deeper view into the supply chain before we choose a supplier and the right price. The total cost of ownership or the total value of ownership we consider when we choose a supplier becomes more complex, more difficult. And there was regulatory comes up as well and brings us in a situation where we have to see deeper into the supply chain.
Okay. And you mentioned regulatory. There's been in the last number of years an increasing number of regulations passed globally around responsibilities around supply chain. And that's only going to continue as far as I can see. Can you talk a little bit about the reasons for that and the implications of that?
Yeah, in the last years, or maybe in the last decade, a lot of organizations like UN or the EU and the governments in Germany itself started to think about how we can ensure that we have supply chains and companies around us or on our side in our countries, which has responsibility on human rights and be aware of critical situation in on other continents and other countries. That we have the responsibility, as such a rich country we are, that we have a responsibility to other countries in other worlds. And this comes to the point that they say, okay, companies has to consider that on a free basis to say, okay, they would like to take the responsibility and take over the visibility in the supply chain and take the risk mitigation on that. Companies sometimes need some regulatory to do that and to fulfill this responsibility we have as a country like Germany. But on a free basis, it's quite difficult that companies doing that. And therefore, we started to have a kind of an idea and ask the suppliers, okay, please start this risk mitigation process, start this human rights responsibility we have. But we learned in the last years that this doesn't come from alone. A lot of companies looking on the profit, looking on the situation that they only have to see where is the lowest price, where do I have my single source supplier, where do I have my just-in-time piece, where I have the lowest cost. And now we are starting that the regulatory comes more closer and closer, but besides the regulatory, the demand as well. The customers ask for more sustainability. The entire supply chain is looking for more flexibility and for more resilience in the end to ensure that the products come with the right behavior, with the right sustainability to our country and to our customers. And therefore, the companies take now over the responsibility because they are seeing that they gain profit out of it, that they gain new customers out of it. And it becomes more and more important to get the transparency in the supply chain to achieve this demand and to achieve this profit. And now it comes up that the regulatory, on the sideways, so to say, overtakes it a little bit and say, okay, we need that stronger and we need that for all companies. We need this regulatory, and they start to create the Lieferkettengesetz. The English word for that, let us translate it as a Supply Chain Act, and let us use this wording here in this podcast, because there is not a regular translation in the moment. But the Supply Chain Act should force our companies to look on this total cost of ownership, this total cost of value, and ensure that the human rights will be fulfilled in your entire supply chain. And this is where I see a great chance for the companies to, on the one hand, ensure the responsibility on human rights, and on the other hand, create sustainable products where the demand is growing. So we have both human rights and profit. And this, I guess, is a good combination of targets.
It sounds good, all right. But this Supply Chain Act you're referring to is specific for now to Germany, is that correct?
Yes, there are some regulatories already, for example, in France or in US, where already some kind of such regulatories exist. So we are not alone in the world, but it's a minor environment, definitely. Yeah. But this regulatory we are talking about in the moment, the Supply Chain Act, is a special German regulatory, which is coming up in the moment. And I guess, for my opinion, yes, it will be a regulatory, which give us new laws and new requirements. But it's also a chance for us.
So when you say it's a chance for us, you mean that it's a chance for German companies who are for now under this slightly stricter regulation than most other countries to meet that regulation and therefore exceed companies in other countries?
Yeah, yes, in the end, yes, right. So the companies has now the possibility to say, okay, besides that, I have to fulfill that, I have the chance to gain more transparency over my entire supply chain, and therewith I can decide on a broader information level what is the right for my product, for my customer, for my supply chain, and in the end for my profit. And therewith, I guess we can create an advantage on the side like Germany to gain a stronger, resilient, or more resilient and more sustainable supply chain, and therewith a stronger business for the future.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Elevate your brand with the Sustainable Supply Chain Podcast, the exclusive voice in supply chain sustainability. Last year, this podcast's episode were downloaded 113,000 times by senior executives across the world, with listeners concentrated in the EU, North America, and Asia. Become a sponsor. Lead the conversation. Contact me for sponsorship opportunities and turn downloads into dialogues. Act today, influence the future.
And if I am a company who is subject to this legislation, how do I go about ensuring that I am adhering to it?
Yeah, good question. this is not clear so far. This is the big question mark which all companies have to that this act and this law. Actually, the sanctions of when you don't achieve that target, it's unclear. Yeah, so it's not clear in the moment, do you have to pay a fine or is it something else what's coming up and for what? Even this is interesting that this is not clear so far. And how is a company can fulfill this regulatory? And besides the sanctions are unclear, I guess all of the companies have to ensure and to convince the regulator that they have the transparency in the supply chain and when a risk coming up, that they have measures to mitigate them. I guess this is very easy to say, to get transparency in the supply chain on such things like human rights, modern slavery, waste of water, carbon footprint is not so easy, yeah? Because you can imagine the supply chains becoming more and more complex. So it's quite difficult to find the last supplier in Bangladesh to figure out, okay, is that now fulfill our requirements or not? So therefore, you need tools, you need ideas to create methods and processes to fulfill that and to convince the regulator that you have the transparency in your supply chain. And when there are some things coming up, that you get fast enough aware of that to mitigate it and to ensure that it not comes to the suppliers or to your customers. And this is where we from PwC as well working on that to figure out, okay, what is the right process behind that, how you should do that, and how you can convince in the end the regulator. And I guess we have already some solutions because there are existing tools to create transparency in the supply chain. Now we have to figure out how we can get information from the ESG, from the human rights perspective, onto that transparency piece and ensure that our risk processes are aware of such things as well. And not easy, but it's a chance again to create more transparency, do better decisions, and in the end, better business.
Okay. And the kinds of risks that are involved, I guess, we've seen stories in the papers and in the news recently around the use of Uyghurs in kind of forced labor in China. We've seen reports of child labor being used by suppliers to Apple. We've seen reports of lots of things like that. And that's just kind of child and slave labor. You mentioned as well things like carbon. Is that covered under this legislation as well?
No, at the moment we are focusing here on human rights. But you're right. I guess when we consider such a transparency and we are focusing on that, we should go a little bit broader than human rights. Human rights is important and it's driven by human rights, and that's okay. But when we start to think about such a transparency, we should bring other things in as well, and waste of water and carbon footprint and waste in total and re-entry supply chains. That are things we have to cover and cope with due to the risk which are coming up on population and other things and other trends we will face off in the next years. So we shouldn't stop on human rights. We should use the chance to get broader on that.
So if I am a organization working in Germany or in Europe or anywhere in the world, and I have suppliers in another part of the world, and I discover a problem in my supply chain, I discover maybe that one of my suppliers is using underage workers or something similar, what do I do? What's the next step for me then?
When I think about the future, then I have the vision that the system gives up a red flag on that supplier who has this risk or occurs at risk, and the system automatically switches to another supplier and runs around the supplier on a very automatic level. So, but it's a vision. Yeah,
nice.
I guess with the tools we have in the moment, we are at the beginning to get information all of the internet, of the databases, and et cetera. And we are starting to come up to that position. So, But what can we do when we don't have such tools? The point is, the red flag has to come up by information we are collecting on a very structured way. And this is, I guess, before we come to what we should do, let us discuss a little bit about the problem of that. How can we collect all the data and assign that to the suppliers in such an environment? We're talking about thousands of suppliers and 10,000 of sub-suppliers, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
To figure out, okay, there is an article in a newspaper in a small town in India. How do we get this information back in our system and can have the red flag? this is, I guess, a really, this is really in the end the biggest problem. And we have to ensure that we try our very best to get all information together, assign that to the suppliers, and when it's coming up, react immediately. That means we can start supplier audit, figure out, is that right, is it not? Let us work with NGOs. If they have people at these places, ask them, is that right? Did that happen on that location? Yeah, because like always, when you visit a supplier, everything is fine. Yeah, when you come suddenly and you make a test there, then it becomes the real truth coming up. But take NGOs, take companies like global acting companies like PwC, which have locations in India where we can consider that. But the thing is, red flag has to come up. Find out which risk is it, and start your standard mitigation levels, like supplier audits, like changing the supplier immediately, et cetera, et cetera. So this is something which is very important to convince the regulator that you have the ability to fulfill the supply chain.
Okay, and you mentioned as well that we're very early in the life of this particular regulation, that we still don't know what the sanctions will be, for example, or even what the specific regulations are yet. What kind of timeline are we looking for before all this is kind of bedded down and we know exactly what's required and what the sanctions will be?
Actually, we're talking about now with our current status is that we have this information since almost 1 year that something in that environment comes up. When we're talking about the first ideas in the UN and the EU, we're talking about maybe about years. Not sure how long it is. In the moment, we are facing the situation that everyone would like to have that from the EU and Germany. And of course, we from Germany want to have a EU-conform act and law. This is a very important target, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that was actually going to be my next question is, you know, we have, for example, world leading regulations in Europe, like GDPR, for example, which has, you know, set the bar for privacy globally. In fact, you know, what are the chances of something like that coming in the human rights space for supply chains?
I guess to get a global thing could be really difficult because we're talking from the richer countries to the poorer countries, when I would like to say that it becomes difficult to get a global act on that. But when we're talking about Germany, I guess it's a chance for the site, Germany, full stop. If we would like to achieve a procedure which is possible to solve, then we need a EU law or act on that. Mm. Let me bring an easy example. When you are a small chocolate company in Germany, yeah, and you have to buy from a big wholesaler and a big industry or big company out of Belgium, for example, yeah, then it's quite difficult for the small chocolate company in Germany to fulfill the regulatory on the raw material. Okay. If we can take the Belgium industry or chocolate industry, this big company has fulfilled the regulatory, and the small chocolate company from Germany buys from him, then when both fulfilled it, then both are from the regulatory fine. So we need this EU agreement to ensure that we can fulfill that on the entire supply chain, and especially when we're talking about consumer goods. And so for this, for me, it's very important that we have the alignment with the EU. And when we now come back to the timeline, that is in the end the problem. So Germany will change the chancellor, I guess, in autumn. Yeah, so we have a new administration from autumn on. So there we will have to wait this year, I guess, to come to that point that we decide about this regulatory. But in the end, it's good because we have to align that with the EU, and this takes longer. And for that, I can imagine that we're talking about 2022, where we have maybe a kind of a law and an act in this environment.
Okay, so a year and a half's time. So really, companies should start, you know, thinking about this and acting on this now to make sure that they can be in compliance with the law when it comes into effect.
Yeah, absolutely right. Maybe we are not sure in the moment how the act and the law will call it and which sanctions coming up, but it is clear that something like that comes up. It will be. Yeah, so, and we can be for sure on that. and take it as a chance. Like I said before, get transparency in your supply chain. Be focused that you have the visibility about your entire supply chain. And if the regulatory comes up, then it's easy for you to bring the angle of human rights and ESG into that consideration. So visibility in the supply chain is what you'd want to have to gain more profit. Do it now and don't wait on a regulatory or a law or act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm curious as well. We have, for example, I have a cup of coffee in my hand here, and you know, there is that kind of fair trade stamp that you can get for coffee when you buy it. Is there anything similar for human rights? I mean, fair trade is kind of human rights in that it's, you know, fair trade. The people are dealt with fairly, but you know, that's a kind of a specific use case, but for a kind of a broader thing like manufacturing or the kind of things we're talking about, is there any kind of stamp or logo or mark or way of currently saying, yes, absolutely, my supply chain is free of slavery or human rights abuses or anything like that?
I guess we have a lot of stamps in the world and marks and marketing material, which gives us as a consumer an idea of they try to have a fair coffee or whatever. We can have a separate podcast on that, how that really is or not. But I guess we will, for the act, we will have the situation that companies has to convince the regulator to fulfill the process, and there we will have audits on that. I guess I can imagine, for example, that audit companies like PwC, KPMG, or the Big Four in the end have the responsibility to run through the process on the company side and say, okay, yeah, they have the process in place. Yes, they do the mitigation, and now they get the certificate or the audit on that process. I imagine that they will do it on that level. So it's good in the end for the audit companies, but in the end, it's a little bit more than only a stamp. It's a economic, business driven audit and stamp, which ensures that companies fulfill that. And for that, I'm quite sure that's the right way.
Okay. Jan, we're hitting on the 20-minute mark now. We're a little over 20 minutes. Is there anything I've not asked you that, you know, you wish I had? Any topics we've not covered off that you think it's important for people to be aware of?
Yeah, maybe let us a little bit look on the tools and possibilities we have already in the market. So what is benchmark at the moment, where we can see transparency in the supply chain, which is already good. Yeah? And let us look onto the food industry a little bit, for meat, for example. Mm-hmm. So we have here tools and possibilities to ensure that we know in the end what was the name of the cow we have eaten. Yeah? So this is okay. That we know about the farmer or the environment where the cow and the pigs are coming from. But so we have very clear transparency and to ensure that the customer knows where the raw material is coming from and what he's eating in the moment. Yeah? So there are already some good solutions in the market and ideas which are regulatory driven, which helps companies to get a more clear view on that and gives the customer the possibility to choose. And if the customer is able to believe in the stamp and the mark and the word what is on the product, then it's easier for him to say, okay, I would like to buy bio, or I would like to buy a German product, or I don't want to ensure that I have here foreign products which travels days animals through Europe. Yeah, and I guess this is a very good example where we can see already how that can work. Is it all fine and is all solved? No, it is not, of course, but it's a good example to see that, how that can be done.
Okay, superb. Superb. Jan, if people want to know more about yourself or about PwC or about the regulations we talked about or anything else we discussed in the podcast today, where would you have me direct them?
Yeah. Actually, you can find me on the Sustainable Supply Chain and on the PwC homepage. I will link you that on the podcast. And of course, personally, you find me at LinkedIn, Jan Hermann or Xing, like we have in Germany. there you can find me definitely. And we can expect that we have in end of February a new blog for the Lieferkettengesetz for the supply chain coming up soon. So hopefully you will find the time to figure that out that you can read this blog.
Okay. So if that comes out at the end of February, send me the link to it, Jan, when it comes out, and I'll update the podcast notes with that.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Superb. Jan, that's been great. Thanks a million for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure. And looking forward to the reaction.
Okay. We've come to the end of the show. Thanks everyone for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital supply chain or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application of choice to get new episodes as soon as they're published. Also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.